Let's move on, please, then, to item 361.
Suspend system development charges for parks and recreation, environmental services, transportation, and water for the construction of accessory dwelling units or the conversion of structures to accessory dwelling units until July 31, 2019.
I'm going to make a couple opening comments. I know Commissioner Salzman has some as well. This is really a good piece of work, in my opinion, that we're extending this SDC waiver program for accessory dwelling units. You know, in a city that's growing very rapidly, we're looking for all kinds of ways to make that more livable and more equitable as we struggle with growth and housing costs and these other issues. So ADUs, as we call them, accessory dwelling units, are a great tool for both livability and affordability. And they give people a lot of flexibility about how they might help meet the housing needs of our city. So providing that incentive was a good idea. Continuing that incentive is a good idea. And I'm pleased to bring this resolution forward with my colleague, our housing commissioner, Mr. Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. And I believe that we should, hopefully, we will act to extend the system development charge waiver for accessory dwelling units. This will be the third time the council has created an exemption for a three-year period. We've seen the exemption incentivize the construction of this popular housing option, and it's good public policy. I think we all want to see infill development occur. It's consistent with our growth and our comprehensive plan goals. And of course, I recognize that not charging the system development charge fee has an impact on our infrastructure bureaus, and council needs to be cognizant of this. But the trade-off is, as I said, creating infill housing stock and growing, providing property owners options on how they and their family members use their property, I think outweighs this impact. And I don't know if we have anybody.
I think we have a formal presentation, okay. But I know Matt Grum from your staff is standing by for questions, but I think we should first call on Commissioner Lewis
from
Multnomah County, because she's
here. I've been looking forward to asking Matt Grum some questions under oath.
Okay, that'll be a pleasure. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. All my friends are in one place, right?
That's right. Oh, yes. We're glad you're here. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
We missed you the other day, but we know you were doing God's work.
Yes, sir, I was. Unfortunately.
Our condolences to Roy and his family.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Hales and Portland City Commissioners. My name is Loretta Smith, and I am a resident of District 2, as well as a District 2 County Commissioner. Today, I'd just like to share my support for Commissioner Salzman's and Mayor Hale's efforts to highlight how accessory dwelling units, ADUs, play a role in the ways we can take up and address issues concerning housing affordability in Portland. And as you all know, housing affordability is a huge, huge issue in Portland. I think we have every level of government who is trying to figure out strategies, you know, and together how we can make this a little less, you know, cumbersome for people who can't afford to live in the city at all. And as you saw last week, I think both chambers, the county and the city, we were bombarded with a lot of folks who were really, really hurting behind the affordability issue. And while there is a common perception that ADUs are for those people with higher incomes and means, in the Portland area, this is an alternative housing option being offered as a solution for building neighborhood density. Portland and the surrounding Multnomah County's identity is woven into the fabric of its neighborhoods. And as a longtime resident whose family roots go back to my grandfather, who worked in the Kaiser shipyards back in 1942, I've seen firsthand how this place has developed over time and how the identity of North and Northeast Portland, including historically Black neighborhoods, have changed. And as a county commissioner, I am all too aware of how these same neighborhoods, buildings, ADUs is difficult due to the high costs and impact on homeowners. So I think what you're proposing today is a huge, huge help to make sure that we can do infill and that we're not trying to push out the urban growth boundary. ADUs are an important part of the conversation about neighborhood identity. They represent a way to accommodate community members, their caregivers, and family members. They also benefit homeowners and renters alike. And research has indicated ADUs offer real potential for comparable, affordable rents and living arrangements here in the Portland area. And this resolution being brought forth today, extending the sunset on system development charges on ADUs until 2019, it will alleviate the high cost for construction and development of ADUs. At a time when the cities of Portland, Gresham, Troutdale, Beaverton, and Milwaukee, Oregon, and other regional cities wrestle with the issues of housing affordability and availability and seek to offer ways residents can afford the adequate living spaces, it is very clear to me we must promote strategies that offer a means to an end, and this is one of the strategies. The use of ADUs, although not the only answer, presents us with a simple yet effective means to create living units for people who are unable to afford the skyrocketing prices associated with home ownership and renting. ADUs can provide a win-win situation. Homeowners can offer living units with reasonable costs for development, while the region gets increased density without bumping up against urban growth boundaries. I realize that this is just one part of a larger narrative about housing access, availability, and affordability. And I know that many of us, both in this room and beyond, are confronting just how we look at residential security for people we represent here in the city and in the county. But I hope our efforts like these, which lessen the cost and ultimately benefit homeowners and renters, can keep fueling this dialogue. I hope that we can collaborate on this as we remember housing is more than just appropriate dwellings. It is also about enabling people to say where they want to live and call home. It is going to take creative solutions and ideas for us to make sure we're helping everyone, and I just think that this is one of those creative strategic ideas that we need to continue. I want to thank you for your support of this, for the original resolution, and today I urge everyone to support and vote for the second extension. Thank you
very much,
Commissioner. I thank you for being here today. Yes. I appreciate it. I was peripherally following. There was a discussion of the property taxes for accessory dwelling units. Do you know where the county ended up on that issue?
Well, as you know, we got an interpretation from the Department of Revenue.
I lost track long before that happened, so if you could refresh me
and
others.
One of the issues that I was concerned with is that Multnomah County was assessing the entire property instead of just the ADU. There is an interpretation that is underway right now that suggests we should only be doing just the newly built ADUs. Currently, Department of Revenue has a task force looking at this, and I think, Mayor, that they're going to be coming up with an additional assessment and how we should be looking at it. But just to back up just a bit, we did refund from the county some of those dollars for property taxes, because I got so many calls from people who said our taxes went up by $8,000. They had no idea that they would be reassessed for the entire property and not just the 800 square feet that they're putting in their garage. So hopefully we'll all get the same interpretation and that we will be able to add additional density to the urban growth boundaries. And I could say the number of ADUs that have been built are in my district. And so it is a huge issue. It also offers a affordability for seniors who may want to rent out their big home and move to the ADU. So hopefully we'll be able to get a standardized interpretation of, you know, what we should do.
But for right now, it's still pending, and so that's something that if people are thinking of doing it, they should factor that in, that they could be assessed a higher property tax.
Well, what I would suggest to them to do is to call Multnomah County Assessor's Office to see what they're doing today, because at the high end, if that's what we're doing, they need to know what their ultimate costs are going to be, and not just assume that it's going to be, you know, retracted in some way.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for asking the question.
On that issue, too. We appreciate your advocacy on that.
And I just want to say to you why I am on the record, Mayor and City Council. I so appreciate all of you and your support of the Summer Jobs Program by the name of Summer Works. And I know we have partnered with Work Systems, the county and the city, and you all have been so great to continue this program that I don't know what some of our kids would have been able to do without this summer job. It is so important. And just to leave you with a statistic, so if you have any other requests for additional summer jobs, just know that we have about 32,000 students who are from the ages of 16 to 24 who have no job and they're not in school. So they're just randomly out here in the Portland region with nothing to do. Summer jobs offer an alternative and it's an additional strategy to try to train some of our youth. So I just want to say thank you so much for supporting this for the last 5 years.
Loretta, you just said something that I think bears repeating, because I had a similar conversation with the head of Work Systems, Inc., on whose
Andrew.
Board you serve.
Mm-hmm.
And when I learned that there are 30,000 young people who we describe as disconnected,
mm-hmm.
I want to go back to what you just said. 30,000 young people between the ages of 16 and 24
yes.
that are not in school and that are not employed.
That's right.
So these are young people at the greatest risk of maybe getting involved in activity we want to discourage, or seeing their horizons limited, or a number of other things. And so it really didn't hit me until I heard the number. 30,000 young people that are at risk of seeing their horizons limited if we don't, in these critical years, give them a hand up.
And Commissioner, one of the things that we have been advised to do through the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, we're not calling those students at risk anymore. We're calling them opportunity youth. And those opportunity youth need an opportunity in this community. And for whatever reason, whether it be gang violence, homelessness, drug and alcohol, or just, you know, not being able to get along with your family and couch surfing in different places, we have a very serious problem, a youth employment crisis, and not just the public. And we have stepped up in a big way, Mayor. 80% of the money that Work System uses for summer works is from the public dollar. What we need is the private sector to step up and join our efforts so that we can at least have a couple thousand kids in work. It's not gonna bend the 30,000, but we need to figure out some strategies on how to put those folks back into the queue. So I thank you for your support, and I'm gonna thank you in advance for supporting the Summer Works program. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you being here today. Thank you. So I know we have some folks that are signed up to speak on this item. Let's call them, please.
Have questions first, or you want to
we can have questions for Matt first if you'd like. Come on up.
Swear the witness in.
I think
I may have some amendments.
Okay.
So yeah, one of the reasons we think it's important to have this 3-year window is because there is a chill as a result of the Department of Revenue's interpretation of property tax reassessment. There's been a really chill on ADU development. So we think if this task force does result in a ruling that property owners can rally around and want to go resume their ADU plans, it's probably going to take at least a year for that to happen. So with that, I'll just turn it over to questions for Matt.
Questions.
Yes, question for the commissioner and Matt. I totally agree that we need to increase density and increase the supply of housing, which improves affordability. But when we allow apartment buildings to be built, that increases density, but we require the developer to pay SDCs. And we have SDC waivers for affordable housing, but we require that the housing actually be affordable. I have two main concerns about a 3-year extension. One is that I don't think that we know how many ADUs are actually going to be used as Airbnbs, to use the one company as a shorthand for short-term rentals. And if they are largely being used for short-term rentals, they aren't actually increasing the housing supply for Portland residents. And second, I think there's no guarantee that ADUs will be affordable. There's nothing to stop people from renting out an ADU for $1,500 a month. So I've talked to Matt about this, and I understand that there are some questions about the logistics and the administrative ability of us to say that we only have the waiver for ADUs that aren't used for as short-term rentals, or that we impose a requirement of affordability. And maybe we can't overcome those logistical problems immediately, but it concerns me to have a three-year extension without having fully addressed those issues. I'd like to think that there's some way before 3 years we might be able to resolve the administrative and logistical issues and put some parameters on this waiver.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I'm Matt Grum with Commissioner Saltzman's office. Excellent points. First, I'll address the infrastructure and the difference between a multifamily apartment building and an ADU. The feeling oftentimes, and I've read this from different advocates, is the infrastructure impact. Oftentimes when an ADU goes in, the same water meter you have can be used for the ADU. You don't build a new parking driveway for the ADU, perhaps, whereas obviously a multifamily building has a lot of impacts on the infrastructure. So it's felt that there is a lower impact on those infrastructures, and that's some of the rationale on that.
If there wouldn't be, if it was the same water meter, there wouldn't be the water SDC.
I've heard that as well, and it depends on how it goes on that thing. Oftentimes there might be I've heard another story where it was a garage that already had a bathroom in it, and they put a sink in, so that, yes, the sink would have triggered an SDC, but it wasn't as large. Just the issue of a lower impact on the infrastructure is one of the rationales that I've heard about the SDC waiver.
But, I mean, in terms of usage of parks and the transportation system, new people are new people.
That's true.
Can I?
Oh, I just wanted to maybe add on the affordability issue. I mean, we have looked at this issue of, is there a way we could tie the waiver to affordability? And I think Eli Spivak is here somewhere.
Yes.
Probably will want to testify on that. He's put forward some very thought-provoking ideas. But I think what we're confounded by is that ADUs can go through a cycle of uses. You know, they can be used as a short-term rental. They can then be used perhaps to house aging parents. They can then be used to be put into the rental market. So trying to choose a point in time and say it must be affordable, I think is hard for us to figure out how to get our arms around
that. Excellent point. The best research we have is 2013, the Department of Environmental Quality, the state, did a pretty good analysis of what's happening in Portland. They really support these for the efficiency uses. And they found that about 80% of the ADUs were being used as a long-term rental. But what was even more surprising was 20% of that 80% were actually at zero to much lower amounts of rent, oftentimes zero, not paying any rent for either a child or a grandparent or something. So we believe there is an affordability aspect. Again, it's hard to jump on that number exactly.
I'm concerned that the resolution directs the affected bureaus to come back with ordinances by May 11th, which is very quick in order for us to be able to figure out some of these issues. I share the concern about short-term rentals, and I'd like to know more about how, at least initially, if the waiver is for 3 years, there's a possibility that it has to be affordable for 3 years, if it's not used as a short-term rental for 3 years. What is the average system development charge on it?
We've been told that right now for an ADU it's around $17,000 if you add everything up.
Huh. That's different from the number that I was given, which was a range between 8 and 13.
8 and 13, I believe that was about 3 years ago, which might actually still be listed in the resolution. I might have missed that on my analysis.
And what's the average cost of building an accessory dwelling unit?
I think the professionals here can talk to that best. I believe it's somewhere between $80,000 and $120,000.
So as a fraction of what the cost is, it's 8 to 13 or even 17 is a relatively small amount of $120,000. The accessory dwelling unit charge would apply if there's an accessory dwelling unit purchase being constructed as part of a new construction. There's developers who are building both the main unit and the accessory dwelling unit, and if the waiver were not in place, they would be required to pay on both. Is that correct?
Correct.
So I'm wondering if there's a way to set the waiver so that it doesn't apply to new construction where people are going in with that in mind. And so have you looked at all into the short-term rental issue? Because that's what we're hearing more and more, is that homes are becoming, residential areas are becoming commercial districts with lots and lots of turnover in the short-term rentals.
Right. No, we definitely examine that. We're looking at, you know, could you compare it to what we do for a single-family home in the SDC waiver, in a sense of, okay, if you were to turn it into a short-term rental, then you would come in and pay the SDCs after the fact. The problem that we sell is we just might be creating scuff laws. People that would come in, say they're not going to use it as a short-term rental, maybe they really don't want to use it as a short-term rental for those years that the child is in the home or the grandparent is there. Then when they move on to a different stage, they want to use it as a short-term rental, they will come into the city, and we would tell them, absolutely, now you have to pay your $17,000. We feel they would probably walk out the door and not get their permit and do it as a short-term rental anyway.
Well, then we would know where they were, though. So I think that that's something that we should be looking at. And then finally, did you consider the fact that in the park system development charges that are going into effect in July, that we did already say that there was going to be a greatly reduced system development charges for
That analysis on
structures that are under 800 square
feet. Right, yes. And my understanding is that's still being challenged, so we're not sure that that SDC program will be in effect.
We're planning to implement on July 1st. So, Commissioner, did you have some other questions?
Well, thank you. You actually very nicely framed some of the concerns I had. I want to just build on what Commissioner Fritz said and just ask three questions. So, in the teeth of the recession, when we first agreed to this SDC waiver, my recollection is we did it in part to incentivize ADUs, and in part because we were seeing rampant noncompliance with the building code. So we thought if we lowered a barrier, a cost barrier, more people would come in, get a permit, and therefore they'd be safer units. Is that fair?
Those were two rationales, absolutely.
Okay. When we waive SDCs, we in effect shift some of those costs to another class of people. Is that correct?
It's a way of looking at it, yes.
And we have two kinds of SDCs. We have some that are forward-looking and then some pay back retroactively, correct?
Yes.
So for me, because we're talking about the backward-looking effect of waiving SDCs for utilities, I think it's very important to identify what's the public benefit, because we are doing a little bit of cost shifting. I believe that when we waive SDCs for affordable housing with regulatory agreements, there's a clear public interest that's obtained, and it's enforceable. I was persuaded during the recession that bringing an illegal industry out into the sunshine and making it conform to our building code and incentivizing them was laudable. I'm even currently persuaded that limited use of ADUs for short-term rentals has a community benefit, because it may very well keep some of the folks in their homes that Commissioner Loretta Smith is concerned about. The extra income allows a homeowner that wants to age in place cover those costs.
We've heard that in testimony.
And I've heard that, so I appreciate that. I guess for me, because it's a closer call, I just want an understanding that if the sponsors intend to continue with the 3-year period here, we're clear that if a member of council wants to bring this back in a year for further consideration, that's agreed. And I see Commissioner Saltzman nodding. And the reason that the utilities may want to do that is that our oversight bodies, both the Citizens Utility Board and the Portland Utility Board, are pushing us to do better on cost recovery, including on systems development charges. And since we have a delicate balance of all the funding sources to stabilize rates, I want to make sure that our regulators are on board with what we're doing, so reserving the right to come back in a year with a proposed modification.
Understood.
Would an alternative be to amend the ordinance to just do it for a year and then come back and see again?
Well, I would, you know, that's an option, Commissioner Fritz, and I know that from the utilities' point of view, we are likely within a year to come back and have this conversation. And one of the things we want to do is run some numbers and do a little more analysis with our partners.
So, my preference, I mean, I'm happy to revisit it. It's always the will of the council to revisit this in a year. But I think we should establish the 3-year window because, as I said earlier, this assessor's ruling has put a chill on ADU development. And so we have a lot of pent-up demand that if it gets cleared, the green light from the assessor's office, we're going to be telling people, well, we may be revisiting it ourselves in a year because it expires in a year. So it just it creates more uncertainty for people to go ahead and build ADUs.
I think wouldn't having it just for a year be hurry up and get it built?
Well, sure, but
they're not going to do it now, given the assessor's ruling.
No, the assessor's ruling comes in, and then they know that they've only got another year to do it while they're certain of this waiver.
Well, as we heard earlier today,
in a crisis,
projects take a while to develop, even small ones, and sometimes the rest of our permit process, as we heard earlier today, does not always go swiftly. So I don't think giving people a one-year window to build things is necessarily going to be a long enough duration that it actually works in the real world of construction. But I would suggest we hear from the people that are here to talk about that because we have a bunch of practitioners here. So maybe you save the rest of our questions for Matt until after testimony. So let's call the folks that are here to speak. Thank you.
I show seven people signed up. The first three are Jodan Palmieri, Sharon Nelson, and Hans Dorr.
Come on up, please. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi.
You can go ahead and start while they're getting settled.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Hales and City Commissioner. Commissioners, my name is Jodan Palmieri, and I work in the Green Building Program at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here today to support the SDC extension that you're considering today. DEQ has researched and promoted ADUs in conjunction with the city for the past 5 years. Our research showing the low carbon footprints of small dwellings has led us to support ADUs through zoning codes, building codes, financing, appraisals, tours, and survey research. Our 2013 survey research showed that ADU owners in Portland, Eugene, and Ashland showed that over 80% of these ADU owners are providing long-term housing with their accessory dwelling units. Additionally, the survey demonstrated that approximately 16% are providing free or affordable housing with rents below $500 per month. For Portland ADU owners specifically, we found that the two biggest barriers to ADU development are cost and design challenges. Waiving the SDCs may be the most substantial action that council can take to support ADUs. ADU development is driven by homeowners and provides flexible housing in a growing city. Despite the current incentives, ADUs still represent less than 1% of the total housing units in the city. However, single-family zoning dominates the city's land area and represents an important area of growth that homeowners themselves have the control over. Portland is a leader in ADU development, research, and education. A continuation of the waiver will allow these low-impact, homeowner-driven, flexible housing forms to continue to flourish. There was a lot of other things we surveyed about in the survey. I'm happy to answer any other questions about the survey research, including short-term rentals. And thank you so much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Do you think there might be an opportunity to resurvey soon?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. It was
worth exploring just because we could get some more data about this short-term rental issue.
Yeah, happy to discuss that with city staff.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Good morning. Who'd like to be next, please?
Good morning. My name is Sharon Nelson. I live in an ADU at 2235 Northeast Emerson Street in Northeast Portland that was constructed in 2012. On the property of my daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren. I moved to Portland in 2012 to be closer to my children and grandchildren after the death of my husband. Being able to build and live in an ADU has provided me with an affordable long-term housing option, stable housing costs, and the opportunity to age in place, the opportunity to live intergenerationally with my children and grandchildren, and also maintain my autonomy. The City of Portland ADU permit fee waiver made the construction of the ADU more affordable for my children, saving approximately $11,000. ADUs can provide a long-term housing option that is more affordable than retirement facilities. I am able to maintain my autonomy, yet have loved ones close by for social support and day-to-day living needs. ADUs housed two households efficiently and affordably on one property. I encourage the city to extend the ADU fee waiver to continue to make ADUs a viable option for affordable long-term housing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Hans Dohr, and I wish to talk to you in support of continuing the fee advantage treatment of ADUs in Portland. I'm 83 years old, and when my wife died 3 years ago, I was looking to move closer to my daughter in Portland. I searched for available options, which were very limited in terms of price range and proximity to her residence, and then became aware of the ADU program in Portland, which afforded me affordable ways to meet my needs. My daughter's property lent itself to construction of an ADU, where I now live quite independently, but still am able to avail myself of family support, such as transportation to healthcare providers, etc. And I believe that for many older residents, an affordable ADU is an excellent solution to continue living in our city on our own, but still within reach of needed support systems. I also believe that our city will gain from continuing to encourage ADUs by fee policy in terms of attracting and retaining senior citizens, which are not a burden, but continue to contribute to society. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you all. Appreciate you being here this morning. Okay, let's call the next three people, please.
Are David Davis, Joe Robertson, and Janice Thompson.
Come on up, please. ADUs. Good morning. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Good morning. My name is Joe Robertson. I'm owner of Shelter Solutions. I'm a builder. And I've testified in front of this commission a couple times concerning some ADU issues. I've been building ADUs in the Portland area since the Planning Code Amendment of 1998. I wasn't actually going to testify this time. I was going to let my previous customers testify about their experiences until yesterday afternoon. Someone asked me of the recent ADUs that I built, how many were for the use of the elderly? And so I went back and looked. In the last 2 years, 32 ADUs I've been involved in, 9 of them involved directly the elderly. I'm very passionate about aging in place and universal design, and ADUs are ideal for that use. So I looked a little further, and to address Commissioner Novick's concern about short-term rentals, 3 of them are being used as short-term rentals right now. 3
out of 32?
3 out of 32. So 28% of those 32 were for elderly use, and 9%, 3 out of 32, for Airbnb at the time. I believe Airbnb itself is kind of a non-issue, or it should be dealt as an issue of Airbnb, not as an issue of ADUs and regulating use for Airbnb as far as bedrooms, ADUs, or however they're used. But I also believe it's a temporary thing that I believe Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, that it's going to transition in and out of short-term rentals to long-term rentals to family members, and that's the beauty of an ADU. So, and also to Commissioner Novick's statement about, which is a valid point, that apartment builders do build many units and have to pay SDCs on those many units. Well, ADU builders are individuals. They're individual homeowners. They're not developers. and they've already got a home. They're already paying for utilities, and that's not adding to the infrastructure. So I wanted to make that point. And one other point real quickly, if the fees were in place, and whatever that number is, let's say $17,000, which I believe to be fairly accurate, we just in January had the planning code amendments changed to allow for smaller ADUs, to encourage smaller ADUs, and that size of fee would just completely take that possibility out of play. And I think we do need smaller and more variety of ADUs, and I think that the fees would just completely do away with the chance of building small ones. So,
Thanks very much. I know your experience is very helpful. Thank you. Good morning.
Hi. Janice Thompson, Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, CUB. So you may wonder why we're here on this. Obviously, CUB monitors matters affecting Portland's public utilities, and the SDC exemption reduces the revenue from those bureaus. However, kind of CUB doesn't not care about, you know, parks and PBOT and whatnot, and certainly with a personal Portland resident hat on, I think it's an issue. So what I want to do, CUB is not inherently opposed to these kinds of exemptions. I want to make that clear up front. But I want to take this opportunity to map out kind of our initial thinking. You know, this is the first time we've kind of been thinking about this, so I want to reserve the right to learn more and come back. But here's what is striking us as three important evaluation principles. One is that any SDC exemption should be across the board. You shouldn't apply it just to the utility bureau, shouldn't apply it to, you know, just the parks or PBOT. And that's, you know, that's the case with this situation. That the exemptions need to have a really clear policy goal focusing on a needed and important benefit to the city. And I think the affordable housing issue that's under discussion here kind of meets that criteria. What was striking in just looking at the ordinance language was kind of lack of data and lack of information on enforcement and how to ensure accountability. So I think it's not only meeting a clear and important, you know, goal and benefit for the city, but you know, just having there be some meat to it, you know, some teeth to it. And then third, to keep in mind the bigger picture. You know, a dynamic of concern here is that, well, okay, we could have an SDC exemption here, and then another issue comes up, and, oh, maybe we should, you know, have an SDC waiver there. And so I think keeping in mind of the bigger picture, I mean, for example, for the two utility bureaus for the last fiscal year, the total SDC exemption lost revenue came to $3.5 million. A healthy chunk of that is related to the ADU, but not all. But, you know, that's starting to add up. And I think looking at the lost revenue data from PBOT and parks also seems like a good idea. So there's just this bigger picture. So those are the three suggestions we have. You know, we're not housing experts at all, so I had a few questions toss out, not thinking that, you know, we were the group to answer them, but pretty much all the questions that we had have been raised by
folks. So you're out of time, but you're an important resource. So what are your three questions? Or your few questions?
Oh, well, no, they're repeats. I mean, it's you know, Mr. Novick's questions about, you know, how many, what the units. So no need to repeat questions that have already been raised.
Mayor, can I just make an observation? First, we've had now two public budget hearings, and each time during the utility rate portion, we've had someone from the Citizens Utility Board come and testify, so we really appreciate that, and lay out the issues and concerns you have. And second, Janice, you've made a number of recommendations in this budget cycle, which the mayor and I are evaluating, and it's my intention over the next year to engage the PUB and the CUB in a review of systems development charges generally, and at the end of the one-year extension, if this passes, to then come back to council with ideas that our regulators have come up with. So I just want to put that on the record.
Yeah, I think this is a tool. like I say, Cub's not inherently opposed to it, but it does. Those are the three, our three initial thoughts on things to factor in when evaluating.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Janice. Thank you. Mr. Davis, you're next.
So I'm all for affordable housing and affordable dwelling units and all that, but, you know, I hear a lot about affordable housing, this, that, and the other thing all the time, but the reality of the situation is people cannot afford housing, whether it's so-called affordable or not. And there's homeless people that are falling through the cracks. You have a ongoing war against the homeless in this town. There's all these zombie houses you guys are all talking about now. And, you know, that is a good way to actually solve some of the housing problems in this town, but I don't think zombie houses need to be revived by zombie politicians, because, you know, it seems like half of you people up there aren't really operating with brains. So, you know, I'm more actually into the concept of the community taking over these zombie houses. And, you know, a lot of people talk bad about squatters. Well, there's actually a lot of squatters that go in and improve neighborhoods. There's actually a lot of these places that were seen as zombie houses, but actually they've been taken over by squatters, and they've drastically improved a lot of these zombie houses without the help of the city, without the help of anyone. And, you know, you people seem to demonize squatting. Well, I can see how you would demonize someone who actually trashes a place, but there's actually a lot of squatters all around the world that clean up after their mess, that improve buildings. There's a project called ABC No Rio that my friends started in New York City. This is back in the 90s, and they took it over from the city, and now they actually own the building. And this was a occupied space that community activists and artists and community members took over and revived on their own. So, you know, I'd like to see you guys move beyond just talking about affordable housing, and when you do talk about affordable housing, actually talk about it being not so affordable for a lot of people. And, you know, until there actually is affordable housing, maybe we can establish some more homeless camps or rest areas or other places. And for a start, we could take over a couple of these zombie houses and turn them into a community resource that actually benefits homeless people.
Thank you.
And stuff like that, you know?
Thanks so very much. Okay, let's take the next three folks, please.
The last two who signed up are Eli Spivak and Charles Johnson.
Come on up.
While we're waiting for the next two guests, can I just get a procedural update? Is it your intention, because of the busy afternoon, to work, push through to 1 o'clock to try to complete the morning agenda?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Planning Commissioner Spivak. Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Eli Spivak. I live in the Coley neighborhood in Portland. And I'm supportive of an extension of the ADU waiver on assistant development charges. And a couple things to toss out there based on questions that I've heard so far. For affordability, Santa Cruz linked affordability requirement to their accessory dwelling units, and they got none built because mom-and-pop landlords didn't want to deal with a recorded agreement on their property. I think that I built my first ADU 10 years ago. It was a third the cost of anything else in the neighborhood, same neighborhood. Since then, prices have basically doubled. They're still a third the cost of any house in that neighborhood. So it's a way of providing some market-based affordability in neighborhoods where it's hard to build anything. I think it's fair for accessory dwelling units to pay system development charges. I mean, they do have people living in them, part of the system. And this is a case where Portland's done a wonderful job of supporting the growth of the industry that have been on the books illegal. They've been legal for 20 years. We're building 20 or 30 a year. Now there's as many built last year as about a pretty good-sized apartment building, like 300 or so. Portland is a leader nationally in this, thanks to our city's initiative. And we're not a leader if you look at the continent. Vancouver, BC, goes way beyond Portland in the accessory dwelling unit support. And it's the perfect kind of affordable housing to slip in discreetly into existing neighborhoods, where it's hard to build any housing. On the short-term rental side, Portland obviously has a compliance and an enforcement issue on short-term rentals. But the biggest problem is single-family homes being decommissioned and being taken out of the housing market. Accessory dwelling units were basically putting new housing into the market, and it's the hardest kind of housing to provide in places where it's hard to build it, small homes in existing neighborhoods. I would, if there's pressure to not make this go 3 years, I say do it 2 years, but here's a few things to work on during that time period. One of them is, sure, try and quantify the short-term rental issue. I think that based on the subjective information we're hearing, it's not as bad as people worry about for accessory dwelling units. People who have those using short-term rentals like to brag about them a lot because they want customers, right? People who live in them or build them for their parents or for their kids are just quietly living in the place. Another thing they can work on is the county tax issue. I'm excited that the county tax issue. I mean, that literally, I've heard contractors who could take on no more ADU projects for the past 6 months, suddenly they got time on their hands because people have canned projects left and right. And I know the county's working hard to try and resolve this, but it's gonna, it may end up being a tax court thing. I mean, I don't know how it ended up getting resolved through their interpretation of the county statute. And lastly is tell people what to expect. I've heard numbers, 17,000 a unit. It was 12 or 13,000 before the waiver was instituted the first time. I don't think anyone really knows what the charge is because before the waiver went into place, each bureau had a different way of doing it. Transportation charged 50% of the SDC. Each bureau did it differently. Right now you have a situation where people see this hammer coming up where the waiver might go away, and they're scared to death of what it might be for their $10,000 garage conversion or their $150,000 new one. If we just provide some predictability, then people would, it might not be that scary after all. So that's something else we can do is actually let people know ahead of time what are the fees going to be when they come back in. So maybe a couple of years.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning again, Commissioners. Thank you. I really appreciate County Commissioner Loretta Smith. She's had to leave, but she's taken very seriously the concerns that were very evident 6 days ago when hundreds of people came to the County Commission to talk about the huge problem our community is having with low-income and affordable housing. ADUs are answer. I think that given the amount of money we're talking about and the extreme need, it would be appropriate for you to make this last for 3 years. Unfortunately, this housing state of emergency hopefully will be better in 3 years, but given the 20-plus thousand of low-income and median-income people that are housing distressed right now, we're not going to be looking at a beautiful world 3 years ago where this, or 3 years from now, where this isn't going to need work. So I think you can feel safe about leaving the original language for a 3-year waiver. I do think that however difficult it is to work with Salem, we had to work very hard to get inclusionary zoning. We really need for the state to recognize the state of emergency about rents here. But we need to see more publicly coordinated effort, especially now that Governor Brown has come to Portland and seen the tragedy of so many people living in tents. We need to get public forums that aren't just political campaigns where people talk about the numbers of ADU productions, ways to incentivize people to house low-income people, and not just trust the market, because the market is hurting tens of thousands of people in Portland right now. So we need to open up the public forum with legislatures, city and county commissioners, working to incentivize ADUs that provide low-income housing. And for people who choose to use an ADU as or a private home as an Airbnb, we need to really accelerate our efforts to get fair, effective taxation to make those high-profit properties provide public services for the most distressed units. I know that that's a difficult conversation, but in the housing emergency, I think that many of the tens of thousands of low-income people have not heard enough real numbers and statistics, except for the 600 coming homeless shelter beds, about what we can do for people who are extremely rent-distressed and the numbers of people that – how many people We still don't have the information from Administrative Judge, Chief Judge Nan Waller, and the Oregon court system about how many people are really getting evictions and finding themselves stuck on the streets. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you very much. Okay.
So I guess in light of some of the concerns about the duration of this, I'd like to suggest that we come back to council a year from now with an update on this, and it's council's prerogative where it wants to go in a year from now, but I would still urge we keep the three-year window, but include a report back to council.
Okay.
I appreciate that suggestion, Commissioner. Let me just give some data. Between the beginning of this fiscal year and March 11th, we have had 195 accessory dwelling units built. In comparison, the previous entire fiscal year, we had 190. So there may be some value in having, say, a two-year deadline. I appreciate the mayor's observation that it can take more than a year to get these things planned. If we support accessory dwelling units, which I do, I smiled when Commissioner Spivak mentioned that we've had them for 20 years. I was on the Planning Commission when we first crafted the regulations for them. So I certainly support having more accessory dwelling units built for the reasons that everybody stated. Wouldn't there be some incentive if we made it 2 years to just get on the stick and get them done?
Well, what do we – I like the idea of returning to the issue at some point, particularly with more data about what's actually happening, because I think we have had some speculation about the level of activity with ADUs. So that's, you know, information. You know, Mike Lindbergh always says the facts are friendly, so I think the facts will be friendly to – further deliberations on the question. I won't be here in either case, but I think it's going to be useful for the council to return to the question and say, how's this working? Particularly since hopefully during that year, the tax issue is resolved, and it's resolved in a way that people want to build ADUs.
Mayor, despite the lack of information in the resolution, my staff have been able to get the information for those 195 units that would have been, that have been built this year with the waiver. That if they had been charging system development charges, there would have been $952,000 in the parks system development charge fund. Remember that we have changed the system development charge methodology in going forward so that there'll be a bigger break for smaller units. Transportation would have gotten $274,365, so over $250,000. And again, transportation already charges half of the charge for a single-family home for the accessory dwelling units. Environmental Services uses the 80% rate, and they would have gotten another little over $1 million. And for water, it depends on the meter size. So if they're not changing the meter size, there isn't a system development charge already. So we've already built into the system incentives. Now, whether there are enough incentives, it seems like the fact that these waiver might expire has been an incentive to get more units built this year than last year. So I'm not seeing why we would want to extend it for such a long period when really we want to get this housing built sooner.
But as I still think we should go with 3 years, because I do think there's a chill, as we heard from the gentleman who's doing ADUs. There's a lot of contractors now that aren't doing anything as a result of the chill of the county the state tax ruling. And as was mentioned, this could go to tax court. And so I think there's an uncertainty out there that we need to at least provide some predictability by saying 3 years, revisit it in a year. Council's free to do whatever it wants in a year on this issue, but at least provide a short-term planning horizon of a three-year window of predictability.
Mayor Hales, I have particularly benefited from this discussion and laying out the issues and the testimony, and I am prepared to support the resolution with the friendly amendment that Commissioner Saltzman has proposed.
So I don't think we don't necessarily need to change the text of the resolution here, but it is an understanding that in addition to returning to the council by May 11th with policy and code changes, that there will be a report back to the council in 1 year. So
may I just ask a question of the city attorney on that? You referenced code changes. Are there code changes required from the three bureaus? Pop quiz, sorry.
I'm sorry. I can check with the attorney who covers SDCs. I'm assuming that if it expects it to happen, with code rate ordinance and policy changes, I've got to assume that the SDCs talk about who's subject to it and to exempt them.
I'm assuming there's a code change. When I think we've done this twice before, I believe. We extended it. We did it first at the beginning of the recession. Then we extended it. And at that time, I wasn't in charge of any of the bureaus. But in order to be able to file on May 2nd, which we would need to do for a May 11th hearing, we would need to have any code changes prepared by next Monday in order to get them to the city attorneys. They require 2 weeks ahead of time, so that would give my staff in Parks 2 days to prepare this.
Okay, well, so this is a July 1 effective date. Is there anything magic about May 11th?
That was what I was leading up to ask.
Matt, that was any light on that?
I was able to connect with the bureaus, and if this was passed, this is exactly what they have done before, so it's very easy because they basically just print up the ordinance and file it. And I understand the city attorney, again, looked at it multiple years, so it's a quick thing. The idea with the May 11th was if there wasn't, obviously, it would be a non-emergency ordinances if there wasn't support on the council, so that would then push it out, obviously, into the June. You could probably go a week or two later, but we definitely wanted to have it the second reading, the 30-day.
Yeah, that is almost a month from now. Okay, so... With the understanding that the meaning of that is with any necessary code, rate, ordinance, and policies of change is necessary. In other words, if they don't have to do anything but a boilerplate ordinance, that's sufficient, right? Okay.
I would really appreciate if we could make it.
Is there any reason that we can't make it a week later? Okay. All right, let's make it May 18th. So we're going to change May 11th to May 18th, and again, an understanding that this topic is going to return to the council next year. Okay, let's take a vote, please.
Commissioner Saltzman, actually, Katie and my staff and Matt were having some discussion about the 3 years, 2 years, 1 year issue, and I think Matt gave some indication that 1 year was unacceptable, 2 years might be feasible. I would actually like to support this, but I'm uncomfortable with 3 years. I mean, would you... Are you going to fall on your sword over 3 years, or would you accept an amendment to make it 2 years?
I think it should be 3 years because of the reasons I cited. We need some certainty. There's a cloud over it right now. I do think it's going to take 3 years to clear it up. But, you know, I'm not going to fall on my sword on it.
Well, why don't we see if we have support for 3 years, and if not, then we can take it up again, right?
Or.
Change it to
2 years.
You
could informally poll your colleagues, Mayor, so that, I mean, whatever.
All right. So maybe someone would like to make a motion for 2 years, and we'll see what happens.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Let's take a roll call vote, please, on an amendment for this to have a 2-year effective timeline rather than 3. Roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Thank you. With that amendment, I will also be able to support it. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Made that look easy. Well, vote on the resolution as amended.
Were we changing that date, the 11th to the 8th?
The 18th, yes. Yes. Correct.
That needs to be a motion?
Sure. So moved. It's been moved. Is it seconded?
Second.
So roll call, please, on that amendment.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Now on the resolution as twice amended.
Fish.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Thanks for a great discussion, and thanks to all my colleagues for a collegial way of resolving this important discussion. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Smith for her testimony and the great testimony we had from some ADU residents and builders and others, and I want to thank Matt Grum and my staff for helping to shepherd this through. Aye.
Novick.
I appreciate the accommodation on the number of years. I appreciate the difficulty of trying to figure out, you know, what the right data is and how the world is going to change. And I also appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's continuing efforts to ensure that we have a supply of affordable housing. Aye.
Fritz.
I think the remaining piece that needs to be figured out is the short-term rental piece and also new construction. So that's something that I can be looking into before we bring the ordinances back on the 18th. And I know that Thomas Lanham is working on both enforcement and compliance, as Commissioner Spivak noted, on short-term rentals. So that piece can be done separately, potentially, if a short-term rental application came in on a recently built accessory dwelling unit, we might be able to do some kind of a surcharge at that point or something. So that certainly there are other options to make sure that we encourage these accessory dwelling units to be used for affordable rentals and also for families. Aye.
Thank you all very much. Aye. Thank you, Dan. Okay.